Love Spell by Colleen Faulkner. Read by Michael Tylo. The Virginia Colony, the Peninsula, All Hallows Eve, 1701.
Ach, Sarah, come along.
Robert Cameron halted in the center of the road leading into the small town of Koshatak. The mule he was leading stopped behind him, and the small basket tied to the animal swayed slightly, bringing a wail from the baby inside. In frustration, Rob ran his fingers through the blonde hair that fell over his face as he tried to soothe the babe in the basket by awkwardly patting a little flailing hand.
Ah, how many times must I tell you, child? There is no such thing as witches. Now come along or I'll leave you behind. I told you I have to get to the auction before it begins.
Rob turned right off the road and walked past the first house in Koshatak. He knew he would have to hurry if he was to see the bondman before the other buyers arrived and the auctioning began. Joe Madden had been emphatic. If Rob wanted the older woman with child-rearing experience, he would have to make the sale on time. Rob was hoping Joe would just take pity on him and sell him the woman rather than auction her off. Then he could be on his way.
Sarah!
Rob waved his hand.
Come!
The child had fallen behind again and was now spinning in a circle, her hands over her ears as she attempted to touch her tongue to her nose.
Ach, what are you doing, girl?
Warding off evil spirits. It's All Hallows Eve, Uncle Robbie. Don't you know that this is the night all spooks come to claim our souls? Rob rolled his eyes heavenward. The girl's grandmother had seemed a sensible enough woman to Rob the 2 times he had met her. But she'd been extremely superstitious and had apparently passed on the trait to her young granddaughter in the few months she'd cared for her. Spotting the auction platform in the town center, Rob picked up his pace. A small crowd had already gathered around. Rob halted near the platform and pressed the mule's lead line into Sarah's small hands.
Stay put with your brother whilst I buy us a nursemaid.
We don't need a nursemaid.
No? Well, you may not, but a lad does.
He pointed to the boy in the basket who was finally beginning to drift off to sleep again.
Now just stay where you are, Sarah.
And no more spook nonsense. What if Sugar tries to run away?
Have no fear of that, child. I can barely get the beastie to move at all. He'll not take off on you.
Sarah waved to her uncle and Rob took the plank steps 2 at a time, bound straight for Joe Madden. The sooner he bought this woman, the sooner he could get some semblance of order back into his life. Katie stood stock still on the raised platform, watching the Scot, whose long blonde hair brushed his shoulders in the autumn breeze as he approached and then spoke to the auctioneer. Here she was being sold once again. How human beings could sell other human beings she didn't know. After her mother's death, she'd been sold at the age of 4 into bondage for 21 years. 4 more years of this, she thought, of being passed from house to house, kitchen to kitchen. Good heavens, by the time she was free, she'd be too old and worn out for the life she dreamed of. She'd have been a slave to others too long to ever be able to have a life of her own. Katie looked up. The Scot was only 1 woman down from her now. She watched him out of the corner of her eye.
Ah, Joe, didn't I tell you I can't afford that kind of price? I speak the truth when I say I'm down to my last shillings, man. You know, every hog's head of tobacco I owned was on the Mary Jane when she went down.
The man called Joe, who transported Katie and the others here to the tiny town on the Chesapeake, pushed back his wool hat.
I'm not in the business to give a bondswoman away, Rob. Said sorry or no, I got to make a living somehow. I can't sell her for a copper less.
Rob, what a pleasant name. Pleasant name for a pleasant face. Pity he was scowling again. A man down on his luck, no doubt, Katie smiled. A man who needed a good woman. Scott moved on to Katie. She lifted her lashes hesitantly. He smelled good, like the forest, like her father had. Rob Cameron dropped his hands to his hips, narrowing his blue eyes speculatively as he studied the black-haired girl before him. She was a damn sight too comely for him, with her coal black eyes and rosy lips. That was for certain. He needed a nursemaid and a cook, not a whore. But he was fast running out of options. He had little cash, And if that nephew of his didn't stop that infernal wailing, Rob was certain he'd go mad.
What of this one?
Rob asked.
Joe shook his head. No, you don't want her, Robbie.
He dropped a hand onto his shoulder.
The woman's a witch. A few years back, they'd have burned her at the stake up in the northern colonies.
As Scott lifted his gaze to study Katie's face. She was nearly as tall as he was. He looked at her eye to eye as if he considered her his equal.
The man says you're a witch.
Katie's mouth turned up in the barest smile. And do you believe in such superstition, sir?
Nay, like I tell my niece, tales to scare wee ones.
Katie nodded in the direction of the children. Your babe cries a lot?
My nephew, his mum and papa died last winter, and he's done nothing but scream like a banshee since. You know how to soothe him?
Joe interrupted.
She's been nothing but trouble with the last two homes I put her in.
Rob still studied Katie's face carefully.
You cook and clean?
A neater house can't be kept on the shore.
And the babe?
He pointed in the direction of the shrieking child in the basket.
Please tell me I've got a touch with children. Might well take sorcery to shut his wee mouth.
A salve on his gums and a woman's bosom, and he'll be right as rain. Rob crossed his arms over his chest as he turned to Joe.
How much?
Joe named his price.
Take it or leave it. The pirates are better than you.
Rob complained, pulling out a money pouch from inside the waistband of his breeches. He counted out his coins. Katie noticed that when he tucked the bag back into his waistband, it was empty.
She's yours. Untie her.
Joe took a step back.
What if she sprouts wings and flies? Better to keep her tied to something at all times. The man that had her after Matthews did.
Rob thrust his hand into his wool stocking and drew out a hunting knife. Katie watched him as he cut first the ties at her ankles, then her hands. Thank you, she said softly, rubbing at the raw flesh at her wrists. He pointed toward the children.
Now will you please shut the boy up? Show me you're worth my last shilling, woman.
Making a quick curtsy, Katie grabbed up her skirts and ran across the platform, down the steps and toward the screaming baby. The crowd gathered for the auction parted to let her by. Katie heard whispers as she passed them.
Witch,
someone hissed.
Devil spawn.
But Katie ignored them. Reaching the mule, she bent over the reed basket and lifted the screaming little boy up and out. His face was red and wrinkled, but he had the clearest blue eyes Sarah thought she'd ever seen. She brought him to her chest and thrust her forefinger into his mouth to rub his gums. He immediately ceased his wailing.
I'll be damned,
Rob muttered, appearing at her side. He stared at the little boy's face and then at Katie.
How'd you do that? 'Twas not but... Rob? Robert Cameron.
A short, stout man with a balding head came pushing his way through the crowd.
Just what do you think you're doing?
Rob turned to the sheriff.
What does it look like I'm doing? I bought the girl's indenture. I'm taking her home to care for my sister's children. You know full well the parents drowned months ago. You got no other woman on that place of yours? No, I had to let them all go, you know that. Everyone in the country knows that.
The sheriff made a clucking sound between his teeth.
Can't let you do that then, Rob. Can't let me do what? Corrupt this woman thusly. We ain't Maryland, Rob. You know we got laws here, laws that keeps decent people decent. It would be immoral to take that young woman back to your place way out in the bay. God only knows what would become of her virtue come a cold snap. Hell, even the bonded got rights, Rob.
I just bought her, Jesse. I haven't got another copper to my name.
I can't buy another woman to bring with her. And you know what my credit's like. You could marry her, I guess. Then I could let her go along with you.
Rob leaned forward as if he had misheard the man.
Marry her?
Katie stopped rocking the baby in mid-swing.
Marry me.
The little boy began to wail again. Rob took a step toward the sheriff, his face growing red with anger.
Marry me, bondwoman? Have you taken leave of your senses, Jesse?
The sheriff shrugged.
All I'm telling you, Rob, is I can't let the maid go with you unwed with no chaperone.
Katie glanced at the Scot in heated conversation with the high sheriff. Perhaps a bargain could be struck. She cleared her throat. When no one paid her any mind, she reached out to touch the Scot's arm to get his attention. It was a nice forearm, banded with muscle. Rob, might I speak with you a minute? Katie knew she was taking liberties to address her new master in such a familiar way. But heavens, if they were discussing marriage, first names were certainly appropriate. Rob glanced at the black-haired woman.
What is it?
While still cradling the little boy in one arm, she crooked her finger. In private, might I speak with you? He gave an impatient huff.
Hold there a sec, will you, Jess? Can you wait a minute before you haul me off to the stocks for immorality?
The sheriff nodded, and Rob followed Katie around to the other side of the mule.
What is it, woman?
Katie.
What?
He leaned into her. My name is Katie. He pushed a lock of golden blonde hair off his shoulder.
Katie, then.
She watched his face carefully for a reaction as she spoke. I'd be willing to marry you. He lifted an eyebrow.
I guess you would, me owning 1,000 acres of prime tobacco land, and you owning the clothes on your pretty back.
She bit down on her lower lip, keeping a flare of anger in check. I'd be willing to marry you on conditions. You'd get what you'd want, I'd get what I'd want.
Just say what you want to say, woman. I'm not a patient man.
I'm saying I'll marry you. In name only, for 1 year. I'll cook, clean, and care for the little ones.
And at the end of the year,
come All Hallows Eve again, I'm free to go on my way with 2 crowns in my pocket. She glanced at the mule he brought the baby on, and the animal to ride out on. He threw his head back and laughed.
Do I look like a fool to you, woman?
Without a moment's consideration, she pushed the baby back into his arms and started for the auction platform. The baby began to scream. Rob ran after her, jolting the boy.
Wait!
Katie walked along quickly. Best tend to your nephew, Rob Cameron, he cries.
2 crowns? And I thought Joey was the highwayman. I just bought your indenture for 4 years. I just spent the last shilling I owned, and you're willing to give me 1 year, and for that you want 2 crowns and my mule?
Katie was on the platform steps now. The baby was screaming even louder. Rob stood on the bottom step, jostling the infant awkwardly in one arm. With the other hand, he reached out and grabbed her homespun sleeve to stop her.
All right!
She crossed her arms over her bosom, turning to face him. On my terms. I'll not lay with you. I'm warning you now, Rob Cameron. You touch me and...
You'll curse me with a limp rod, right?
I'll kill you. He almost smiled at the look of determination on her face, but the baby was screaming so loudly that he could barely hear himself think. He jiggled the baby harder.
Right now, taking my pleasure is the last thing I've got on my mind, woman. Just please take him.
He offered her the wailing baby. After a moment's hesitation, she reached out and took him. The boy stopped crying.
Witch! Witch!
The colonists in the crowd hissed.
You'll regret this day.
A man in the crowd warned, as Rob, Katie, and the children made their way out of town. An hour later, Katie walked down a dirt road behind her new husband. Husband, she almost laughed out loud. She'd never thought she'd marry. Marriage was too one-sided. All for the man and not for the woman, but babies tugging at her breasts and an early grave. Now here she was, married to a man she'd known an hour. Katie looked up at her new family. Sarah was skipping along ahead of Rob, who led the mule. After another half mile, Rob dropped back a little.
I understand the coin,
but why the mule? He asked, glancing at her curiously. Katie took an extra step to catch up with him and walked at his side. She shrugged. I don't know. I walked into this agreement. I thought I would ride out. Sarah's bell-like laughter rose in the cool late afternoon air. It was already growing dark, the shadows of the forest lengthening. He'd probably give you sugar now. He hates her. She beamed at her uncle. Katie tucked the baby tighter in her arms. Oh?
Sarah, hush.
Oh, yes, Sarah went on. See, Uncle Robbie, he has this old mare Penny, and he paid Mr. Noah to breed old Penny with Mr. Noah's racing horse. Only she didn't take.
Katie tried not to laugh at the serious expression on Sarah's face as she went on with her tale.
Instead, old Penny, she broke out of the pasture and met up with Mr. Noah's donkey. The little girl nodded her head. That's how old Penny had a mule instead of a horse. Now Uncle Robbie's so mad, he says we're going to eat old Penny come winter. She scrunched up her face. But I think he's just fooling because we got hogs to eat, and bacon tastes better than horse meat any day.
By all that's holy, Sarah, must you tell everything you know?
Katie covered her mouth with her hand to keep from laughing. She looked at Rob. Sounds like you're having a string of bad luck. He tugged on Sugar's lead line, trying to make the animal walk faster.
Oh, you don't know the half of it. 6 months ago, I lost my sister and her husband. His mother came from Annapolis to take the children, but it didn't work out. The boy Josh cried, and Sarah...
He lowered his voice so that the little girl couldn't hear him.
Sarah just couldn't get used to town life. Then her grandmama decided to remarry, and the prospective bridegroom wouldn't have her with the children.
So you took them back?
They're my sister's children. I should never have let them go in the first place. But everyone told me I couldn't care for them, that they needed a woman. They were wrong. And I know that now. They belong here with me on Sarah's stand. They came back 2 weeks ago.
So the children coming back was really good fortune, wasn't it?
Aye. I suppose I could look at it that way. But then last week all my tobacco went down on the Mary Jane. I'm as sunk as she is now. I don't even know how I'm going to feed the lad and lass through the winter snows.
I hear she was only reported sunk. Mayhap...
No, I'm telling you, you don't know me luck. This is a man who started for town this morning riding his horse, only to have to turn back because she threw a shoe. You'll notice I ended up walking into town leading a mule. This is the second year in a row I've lost my crop, and now I'm out of cash. With no coin to hire help for the fields next year, I don't know what I'll do. Sell land, I suppose. Our nearest neighbor, Noah, he's been asking me to sell for years.
But you don't want to.
My parents' land. They came from Scotland and cleared much of it themselves. Sentimental foolishness.
She smiled at him. He had the clearest blue eyes, identical to the baby's. Not foolishness at all. I have nothing left of my mother or father. Nothing but memories. Their gazes met and locked. For a moment, their thoughts seemed to connect. He understood what she meant. He understood her loneliness. He was lonely, too. She could see a smile playing at the corners of his full mouth. A foolish thought crossed her mind. What would it be like to kiss that mouth? She wondered. Suddenly, for no reason at all, the mule halted in the middle of the road. Rob cursed beneath his breath as he tugged hard on the lead line.
I knew she'd not make it to town and back.
Sarah looked to Katie. Sugar don't mind. She stops, and then she don't go another foot. Last week, Uncle Robbie got so mad, he left her in the west field. She stood there all night in the same spot. We thought she was stuck like glue.
Going to turn her into glue.
Rob mumbled as he jerked harder on the line.
I've got to get home to milk.
Katie looked up into the darkening sky. Katie turned her attention back to Rob and the mule. Here, let me try.
Oh, it's no use, Sarah offered.
Sugar won't budge. Not when she gets like this. Not for no one.
Anyone, Rob corrected.
Katie lowered the sleeping Josh into the basket tied to the mule and took the leather lead line from Rob's hand. As her fingertips brushed his, a strange warmth spread from his hand to hers. When she looked up, he was looking at her. She felt a little silly.
Let's go, Sugar,
she said softly under her breath. Then she leaned and whispered in the mule's ear. She didn't pull at the line at all, but instead scratched it beneath its chin. The animal raised its head as she drew away her hand. Katie took a step back, and Sugar followed.
Then she scratched it beneath its chin again. The mule took another step. A moment later, she had Sugar walking behind her down the road. Sarah clapped her hands together, jumping up and down.
Oh, look at that, Uncle Robbie. Never seen anyone get Sugar to move before. She's a witch, isn't she?
Hush. There's no such thing as witches. I told you that. Now run ahead and show Miss Katie the way to Sarah's stand. We're almost home.
As they came over round the bend in the road, the land opened up into wide fields. Fields Rob's parents had cleared. Fields he had cleared. Beyond it, overlooking the bay, was the home he and his father had built of brick from their own kiln. The home he had meant for the bride he'd never wed. The solicitor had made all the arrangements. Rob had paid the fees. But when he had gone to meet his bride on the docks, she had walked off the gangplank on the arm of the ship's captain. She'd wed him crossing the Atlantic. More bad luck. He glanced at the woman Katie, who was leading the mule while being pulled along by Sarah. Katie. The name was fitting. She was an intelligent woman who apparently had a touch to make things right.
Well, God knew he could use a little good luck.
Oh, Katie breathed. What a beautiful house.
Don't expect furniture. I sold most of it winter past.
Well, who needs furniture? You could make some this winter when the weather turns cold. Oh, Rob, I've never seen a house so fine.
It's small. Two rooms. And a hallway down. Two up.
It's a perfect house. The land is beautiful. A plot in paradise.
So I once thought,
he said more to himself than to his new bride. She followed him up the drive toward the house, breathing the fresh air that blew in off the bay. The plantation was beautiful, with its stretches of turned black soil and lines of pin oaks and pines dividing the fields. In the distance, she could see the flat sheet of the glassy bay that stretched into the horizon. With baby Joshua and little Sarah tucked snugly in their beds, Katie closed her own bedchamber door and lifted her single candle stand to survey her surroundings. The yellow candlelight cast long shadows across the large, airy room. This was obviously Rob's bedchamber. Though it was plain, it had his touch. There was a large, handsome bedstead, with a blue and green quilt thrown over it. The walls were whitewashed, with blue-painted chair railing and molding, but lacy curtains hung over the inside window shutters. She was glad he had given her this room. Suddenly realizing how tired she was, Katie carried the candle stand to the bed and set it down on the cherry table. Just as she was about to climb in, she got the oddest feeling. She turned to face the west windows, feeling the hair rise on the back of her neck. Fear. She listened, but could hear nothing but the wind. Then the feeling was gone as quickly as it had come. Must be my imagination, she thought. A new house, so many changes. Wearing nothing but her shift, she climbed into Rob's bed, beneath the quilt, and blew out the candle. Chilled by the cold night air, she snuggled deep into the feather tick. The quilt pulled up to her nose and drifted off to sleep.
Running. Mama was running. Mama slammed the cabin door shut and threw the bolt. Why? Katie, stay, Mama said, leaning over her and brushing her lips against her cheek. Your papa will come for you. She was crying. Mama, don't leave me.
Then came the sounds. Angry voices.
Witch! Witch!
They accuse. Light from torches shone through the cracks in the cabin wall.
Mama, don't leave.
Hush, Katie. Be a brave girl.
Witch! Sorceress! Whore of a red man!
Suddenly the cabin was filled with the ominous sound of splintering wood and the door burst open.
Mama! I've done nothing. Leave me and my child in peace. Mama took a step back. A man with a crooked nose lunged for her and Mama tripped. Mama fell hard on the stone hearth and hit her head. Then Mama didn't get up. No, no, she cried, crawling toward Mama. No, Mama, don't leave me alone with them. No, no!
Katie. Katie. A voice called from above, from somewhere beyond the horror of the dark cabin.
Katie felt someone shaking her. She thrashed about, fighting her mother's attackers. No, she screamed. Not a witch. God's gift. You killed her. You killed my mama. Katie! But the voice wasn't the dream. It was a gentle voice. A man's voice rich with Scottish undertones. Katie, wake up. 'Tis only a dream, honey. Katie's eyes flew open. Someone was holding her. Past day's events flashed through her head. Married. Had she really married the Scot? Rob? Yes. It's all right, lass. Just a bad dream. I'll not harm you. I swear by all that's holy, I won't. He was holding her in his arms. His strength and the scent of him enveloped her. She was so afraid, but of what? The nightmare? She closed her eyes, still trembling. She lowered her head to rest her cheek in the hollow of his bare shoulder. Rob was running his hand over her head, smoothing her tangled hair. What made you so afraid? Who's hurt you so? She took her hands from his shoulders and dropped them into her lap. They say my mother died. They said she fell in an accident when I was 4. I was there, but I don't remember it. They took me away and sold me on the auction block for an indenture of 21 years. Your father? He was supposed to come for me. I remember waiting, but he never came. A smile lifted the corners of her mouth. I don't remember anything about him except that he was tall and kind and had the blackest hair. And he smelled good. She looked up at Rob, like you. His mouth was so close to hers that she could feel his breath on her lips. If you think you're all right now, I'll go. She tightened the quilt around her neck. I'm fine. I'm sorry. Rob still hung in the doorway looking at her. Good night, then. She watched him close the door behind himself, and then she rolled onto her side and slept again. Katie rose early the next morning and immediately set to the task of getting the household in order. She sent Sarah to the hen house for eggs and began to make up a bowl of hot cake batter. Finding an old spider pan in the cabinet, she set to work frying hot cakes on the kitchen hearth for the morning meal. By the time Rob came into the house from milking the cow and feeding the livestock, she set the table in one of the 2 empty rooms on the first floor and was serving warm cakes to Sarah.
Uncle Robbie! Look what Katie done.
Did.
Rob entered the parlor a little hesitantly. Katie noticed he must have shaved outside. He wore his blonde hair tied in a pigtail with a leather thong, but several short tendrils of damp hair curled at his ears. Katie began to slide hotcakes under the pewter plate at the head of the sturdy table.
What she do? He asked, taking his seat.
She made hotcakes. And she even found a jar of honey.
The little girl swirled her finger in the plate and then licked the sweet stickiness from it.
Honey!
Rob looked up.
I thought the honey was long gone. We've been eating our bread and cakes dry for weeks. My sister was always the one to gather the honey. One bee welt on my back and I'm useless for a week.
Katie shrugged as she dropped another cake onto Sarah's plate. Found the honey in the cellar. A whole crock.
Where's the boy?
Rob cut off a corner of an oat cake with his fork and thrust it into his mouth. These cakes were light and sweet.
I haven't heard him all morning.
Sleeping. Katie pushed the plate of extra hot cakes to the center of the table and started for the kitchen. I moved his cradle into the kitchen. I hope you don't mind.
No.
Rob took another mouthful of cake.
Do whatever you like to make your tasks easier.
Katie turned to go back to the kitchen.
Where are you going?
Rob asked. He was drinking a cup of warm buttermilk. Back to the kitchen to clean up.
You've eaten already?
No.
Then sit.
He tapped the wooden chair beside him.
eat with me and Sarah. We want you to be a part of the family, don't we, Sarah?
Yeah.
He pointed to the little girl with his fork. For the sake of the children, of course. Katie slid onto the chair. Of course.
Rob lifted the serving plate from the center of the table and dropped it down in front of her. Before she could get to her feet, he was up and retrieving a pewter fork from the silver box on the mantel. As Katie sampled her breakfast, she looked about the room. It was true the house was sparsely furnished, but what was here was of the finest quality. The walls were covered with floral wallpapering, no doubt, shipped from England and carefully hung. Brocade curtains of hunter green hung over huge windows. Sarah turned to her uncle.
Uncle Robbie, Mama Cat Maria's kittens is running all about in the hayloft.
Ah, running, Robbie corrected her.
Ah, running. She's got a black one. I call him Puddum. Can I have him in the house to sleep with me? Can I?
Cats don't belong in the house. You know that. You don't let cats in the house because they're liable to make a mess on the floor.
Not Puddum. Puddum wouldn't do that.
Sarah, Katie said gently, hush and finish eating now. You can help me with the dishes.
Rob pushed out of his chair, the wood scraping wood. Excellent breakfast, Katie, he said, patting his stomach. Can't say that I've had that good a meal to start off a day in a long time.
I found some dried meat in a barrel in the cellar, and Sarah showed me the root cellar. I thought I'd make a stew for supper.
He walked to the open window. The sunlight poured through the bullseye glass panes to highlight his blonde hair in golden warmth. Katie watched his back ripple beneath his thin muslin shirt as he leaned on the sill.
I've the wheat in the back west field to cut today, but I think I'll wander over to the Widow Hartley's and see that she's got enough wood cut to last her a while. Her property borders Sarah's stand to the south. You can send Sarah on sugar to bring me a bit of bread and cheese at noonday. She knows the way.
All right.
Katie rose and began to clear the plates. She followed him to the lean-to kitchen, where he took a three-cornered leather hat off a peg. She opened the back door for him and watched him walk away from the house, disappearing into the cool morning sunshine. A half-grown black kitten curled at Katie's feet, and she shooed it inside.
Put him!
Sarah called, scooping the kitten up into her arms and carrying it off into the house.
I knew Katie would let you in.
As Katie swung the door shut, she could have sworn she heard Rob whistling as he cut across the yard. Katie spent the remainder of the morning cleaning up the kitchen and surveying her new surroundings. At noonday, she put Sarah on Sugar's back with a tin of bread and cheese and a crock of water sweetened with mint. Then, after putting the baby down for a nap in the kitchen, she set herself to the task of washing dirty clothing. After scrubbing and wringing out the laundry, she went out into the backyard to hang it up on the clothesline. As she was hanging one of Rob's shirts, facing away from the house, she felt the hair rise in the back of her neck. She glanced uneasily over her shoulder. Then she saw it. Through the kitchen window, she saw two dark eyes staring through the wavy glass. Katie ran for the kitchen. All she could think of was little Joshua sleeping in his cradle near the fireplace. She grabbed a shovel, left by the back door, and ran up two wooden steps into the kitchen, her weapon in her hand. Seated on a stool in the corner of the room was an old Indian man. He was dressed in a quilled leather tunic and leather leggings, a knife sheath on one hip. His waist-length silver hair was worn in a single long braid.
This man wondered when you would come. I have waited many years.
She stared at him. For a split second, something seemed so familiar about him. And then he was just another old man again. Intuitively, knowing the Indian meant her no harm, Katie lowered the shovel.
Who are you?
This man did not mean to frighten you, child.
I wasn't afraid.
She leaned the shovel against the doorframe and went to check on Joshua. He slept, oblivious to the intruder.
Oh, you just startled me.
Katie dropped her hands to her hips.
I don't mean to be unfriendly, but why are you here?
Just then, Sarah came running through the door.
Grandpapa, two bears.
She threw herself into the old man's arms. He caught her beneath the armpits and swung her around in a circle, his strength remarkable for such a wizened old man.
What did you bring me? What did you bring me?
The Indian set her gently on the floor. From inside his tunic, he pulled out a tiny leather fringe bag on a long leather cord. Sarah oohed and awed.
What is it? What is it?
Two Bear dropped the leather pouch onto her head. A medicine bag to keep away the evil spirits. Sarah pulled at the top of the bag.
It's so shut, she said, wrinkling her face. I can't see what's inside.
Two Bears brushed her hands away with his larger ones.
You don't look inside. That is part of the magic, Sarah.
Katie stared at the old man.
What was it about him that made her feel so odd in the pit of her stomach?
Just then, Rob came into the kitchen from outside. He tugged off his hat and dropped it under the peg near the door.
Uncle Robbie, look who's here.
Two Bears.
He offered a dusty hand.
We've missed you.
Two Bears squeezed Rob's hand.
I told you she would come. She who would bring the magic back to these lands.
Katie watched as Rob gave a little nod and then laughed off the old man's words awkwardly.
Well, we'll see, won't we, Two Bears? Not but time will tell.
Sarah pulled on the old man's hand.
I have a kitten called Puddum. Would you like to see him?
She led the Indian through the kitchen and into the larger wing of the house. Rob stood awkwardly in the doorway.
I guess you've met Two Bears.
Yes, yes, he startled me. He came inside whilst I was out hanging laundry. He was watching me through the windows.
Rob walked to the drinking water bucket and lifted the wooden lid.
I'm sorry I didn't warn you.
He comes and he goes as he pleases on Sarah's stand. Has since I was a lad. He drank from the ladle. Sometimes he goes months without coming. Then he stays a month. Once we didn't see him for 2 years. I feared he was dead. Realizing she was staring at Rob again, standing there in the center of the kitchen like a knot on a fallen log, she went to the hearth and began to busy herself, raking the coals to start supper.
He said some strange things, she remarked.
Rob wiped the water from his mouth with the back of his hand.
Aye, but he is old. I know he's not always right in the mind, but he's a good man. I'll not turn him away from Sarah's stand, not as long as I breathe.
Katie knelt on the brick hearth and reached for the heavy iron spider she fried the hotcakes on that morning.
Oh, I didn't mean to say he shouldn't be here.
She looked up to see Rob bending on one knee to lift the iron spider from her hands.
I know you didn't, he said softly, his hand brushing hers.
Here they were again, too close. She could smell the scent of the sweet Virginia soil on his calloused hands and the slight hint of mint on his breath. Katie found himself staring into his clear blue eyes, drawn to him as she had never been drawn to anything or anyone before.
I don't mean to make this awkward between us. I can't seem to help myself. I keep thinking about you. Where you spent your years doing what? Just a lonely man, I suppose, too long without companionship.
She reached out and brushed her fingertips against his cheek. It was stubby from the day's growth of blonde beard.
I thought it was me, the way I can't keep my eyes from you.
She could feel her cheeks growing warm, wondered what had possessed her to say such a thing.
Just one kiss, he said, surprising them both. That would end this curiosity, and we could go on with our duties. Me in the fields, you in the house with the children.
Her mouth turned up in a hesitant smile.
One kiss.
Just one, he murmured,
as he brought his lips to hers. It was an innocent enough kiss, barely lasting a second. But the heat of his mouth made her hands tremble, and her heart skip a beat. When he pulled away, she touched her finger to her mouth. Curiosity satisfied?
No.
This time when he kissed her, she raised her hands and lowered them to his shoulders. She heard him drop the iron spider. She felt his broad, strong hands wrap around her waist and pull her against him. This time his kiss was not one of naive inquisitiveness. This was a man's kiss, filled with strength and demand. Katie parted her lips, reveling in the feel of his arms around her, the taste of him. As his tongue delved deep into her mouth, she wondered, how long have I waited for a man to kiss me like this? How long have I waited for this man? Honey, he murmured, his breath warm in her ear. I didn't mean to take advantage of you. She pressed a finger to his lips. You took nothing I didn't offer. I'm a woman full grown. I know what I'm about. He stood and pulled her up with one sweep of his arm. That's good. Because one of us should. She laughed, brushing back a stray lock of his blonde hair. And then she turned back to the hearth to begin the evening meal. The sound of a thunderstorm rolling in off the Chesapeake Bay woke Katie. Grabbing the flannel nightrobe off the end of the bed, she slipped into it. Last night, after the children were tucked into bed and Two Bears was settled in the barn, Rob had brought her an entire chest of clothing that had belonged to his sister. She pulled on her wool stockings and padded down the hall to check on the children. They were still asleep. She came down the front steps. The house was quiet and chilly. She halted on the landing. There it was again. That strange feeling in the house that came and went so quickly that it would be easy to ignore. Doom. Fear. Then it was gone. She walked through the hallway and took the two steps down into the kitchen. Rob was adding a log to the glowing embers on the hearth. He looked up. Startled you? She offered him a hesitant smile. A little. I didn't hear you rise. I thought everyone else was still... She watched him walk toward her. Asleep. She finished softly. Heavens, but he was handsome this morning, all rumpled and sleepy-looking. But he was freshly shaved, and his farmer's hands clean. The smile on his face was for her. He didn't stop until he was half a step in front of her. She could feel her skin tingling. You slept well?
Yes. Thank you for the clothes. The fit is nearly perfect.
He touched the high collar of the nightrobe with one finger. Soft, he murmured. Like you. She took his hand, entwining her fingers comfortably in his.
So what are you about so early in the morning?
It's going to rain, he said.
The smile faded from his angular face as he withdrew his hand from hers.
I've still that whole field of late wheat to cut. The rain will ruin it. Damnation, I should have done it yesterday when the sun was shining.
Her gaze rested on his broad back. He had done a good deed, spending all of yesterday cutting the Widow Hartley's wood, and now he might lose his entire crop of wheat for his kindness. Thunder echoed ominously in the distance.
You've still time.
The entire field and me a man with only two hands? Only the Almighty could save me wheat now.
So pray to the Almighty.
But rowed toward shore. She grabbed his hat off the hook and tossed it to him. You get yourself to the field and start cutting. I'll be there directly.
It's too cold out for the children, and I don't want them left here alone. I'd be lying if I said I couldn't use your help. But the boy and Sarah are more important than any field of wheat. If we lose it, I'll manage this winter somehow. We've heard nothing of the pirates for weeks now, but...
I wouldn't leave them. I'll take them to the Widow Hartley's. No doubt she'd appreciate the company on such a dreary day.
She softened her tone as she brushed her fingertips across his sleeve.
Now just go on with you and hurry. The storm will wait.
An hour and a half later, as Rob turned on a row, swinging his scythe, he spotted Katie and Two Bears cutting across the field toward him. She waved to him. She tugged her bonnet down further on her head. Two Bears struck out toward the mule and cart Rob had left standing at the edge of the wheat field.
You cut and I'll go along and pick up behind you. Tie up the sheaves and load them. Once the cart is full, Two Bears will take the wheat to the barn where it'll stay dry.
In 2 hours' time, she had picked up all the wheat Rob had left in the field and was now following behind him, picking up what he cut and dropped. With a cart filled with stacked sheaves of wheat again, Two Bears started off for the barn.
"Just a little longer," Katie whispered, looking up at the storm that now hung over them, blackening out the sun. "No rain. Not yet, please." Rob turned to look at her as if he had heard her voice, but he didn't question her. He leaned on the handle of his scythe, catching his breath.
"I've never seen a storm like this. It should have hit us full force an hour ago."
"I told you it would wait.
Look, we're already half done." When Rob felled the last standing stalks of wheat, Katie gathered them in her arms and tied up the bundle.
"Let me help you,"
Rob said, dropping beside her on one knee.
"No." She pushed his hands aside. "The last of the wheat, the maiden, is woman's work."
As Rob watched her, she pulled a long blue hair ribbon from inside her canvas coat. She wrapped it around the sheaf of wheat and then closed her eyes, murmuring a blessing of thanks for the harvest. Then she looked up at the angry dark clouds overhead and whispered, "Thank you." Two Bears appeared over her shoulder. He lifted his bird-like arms heavenward, spreading his tattered hide cloak like wings and closed his eyes, chanting in his native tongue. His words finished, he laid his hand on the ribbon sheaf of wheat and smiled. Katie smiled at the old Indian and then picked up the wheat sheaf and pushed it into Rob's hands.
"You have to save it until next year. It will bring good luck." "Looks like it's going to rain," she said, still smiling.
A grin tugged at the corners of his mouth.
"I didn't think it was possible, lass. You couldn't have convinced me this morning that we could get this wheat in, not for all that tea in China."
He was staring at her, his arms wrapped around the wheat.
"How'd you do it?"
But Katie only laughed and turned away. She laid her hand on Two Bear's shoulder.
"Thank you for your help, friend.
Better get the last of that wheat into the barn. I think I feel rain." The old man was grinning as he loped to the mule cart and pulled himself onto the seat.
"This old man needs no thanks. Thanks are not needed for family."
For a moment, Rob and Katie stood watching the last cart of wheat pull away. Then she felt him take her hand. He looked up into the sky as the rain began to fall.
"We'll have to make a run for it if I'm not going to get soaked."
She laughed as he pulled on her hand and she ran to catch up.
"We'll not make it."
Sure enough, they were not halfway across the cut wheat field when the heavens opened up and the cold rain fell on them like overturned buckets of well water. Katie and Rob ran hand in hand across the field, down into the gully, and up toward the house beyond the row of trees. Nearly a month had passed since Katie and Rob and Two Bears had brought in the wheat. Since then, Katie and Rob had fallen into a comfortable daily routine. He worked all day in the fields and in the barnyard, while she cared for the children and prepared the house for the coming winter. But come evening, the hours were Katie and Rob's alone. With the children asleep and Two Bears bedded down in Widow Hartley's kitchen, where he had decided to spend the winter, Katie and Rob had time to talk and get to know each other. They talked for hours on end, sometimes about trivial matters, the children's manners, Rob's plans for their schooling, the old mare who was miraculously pregnant by the neighbor's prized steed. The only thing that cast a shadow over her happiness was the strange foreboding that still haunted her in the house, and now even outside in the yard. Katie looked up from her churning. She could feel the butter was almost set. Where had Sarah gotten to now?
Sarah?
The little girl came running around the corner of the house from the direction of the apple orchard.
Katie! Katie!
Katie jumped up in alarm. She could tell by Sarah's voice that something was wrong.
What is it? Oh, Katie.
Sarah halted at Katie's feet. Something clutched in her small hand.
Katie, it's dead.
She opened her hand to reveal a small brown wren lying lifeless in her palm. A tear ran down her cheek.
Oh, let me see,
Katie said, taking the little bird from her hand. It was still warm.
No, no,
she soothed, petting the little thing with one finger.
Maybe it's not dead. Maybe it's just sleeping.
Katie covered the bird in her hand with her palm and closed her eyes. She brought her forehead to her cupped hands and whispered beneath her breath. Then she opened her hands. The little wren flew off her palm and soared into the blue sky. Sarah squealed with delight.
Oh, you did it, Katie. You did it.
She jumped up and down.
You saved my bird.
It was dead, and you made it alive again. I told you it wasn't dead, Katie said, trying to laugh off the child's seriousness. Sarah's voice dropped to a hushed whisper.
You really are a witch, aren't you, Katie? Just like the people in town say.
Katie stared down at the little pigtailed redhead she loved as her own. She grabbed Sarah's hands and sank down into the dry leaves, pulling Sarah close so that she could look into her eyes.
You mustn't say that, Sarah. Not ever. But you're a witch. You held back the storm so Uncle Robbie could get in the wheat. You made the mule walk when no one else can. You made old Penny's horse get a baby. You made Josh stop crying, you...
Katie grabbed Sarah and pulled her against her chest in a tight hug. She smoothed her bright hair.
You mustn't say it, Sarah.
My mama died because people said she was a witch. Sarah looked up at Katie.
But...
Katie brought a finger to her lips. We all have talents, Sarah. All of us. They are different. But they're God-given. You have to remember that. Do you understand what I'm telling you, sweetie? Sarah gnawed on her lower lips.
You're saying not to call you a witch?
Witch is the word people use to accuse others, to hurt them when they don't understand them.
Oh, I wouldn't want to hurt you.
I know you wouldn't. Katie hugged her again. Now go check on your brother. She pushed her up out of her lap in the direction of the kitchen. Just as Katie sat down to finish her butter, she heard a strange hoot of glee from the barnyard.
Rob? Was that Rob hollering like a madman?
Was everyone vexed this afternoon?
Katie! Katie!
Rob appeared around the corner running toward her.
My ship, Katie! My tobacco!
Rob?
He grabbed her around the waist and swung her in a circle, her skirts billowing out. As he put her down, he kissed her soundly on the mouth.
The ship! The Mary Jane! She didn't go down. She was disabled in a storm, but she never sank. I just heard from Widow Hartley, who heard it from the mill. Damnedest thing anyone has ever heard. A false reporting like that. It's never happened on the Tidewater. Not as long as any of us can remember.
Your tobacco's safe?
My tobacco's safe. God willing, it's in London by now and being sold at an exorbitant price.
Oh, Rob, that's wonderful. Katie threw her arms around his neck and hugged him.
You did it, Katie. My luck's really changed, hasn't it?
It wasn't me. She laughed off his suggestion. I can't bring a ship up from the bottom of the ocean.
It was a mistake, just like you said.
As for your luck, you changed that, Rob Cameron. You've become optimistic. You believe in yourself. He clasped her hands in his.
If I have, it's because of you. You have changed my life, honey.
She touched his cheek, wondering if his heart was pounding as hard as hers was right now.
Say it, she thought. Tell him you love him. Tell him you want him to make love to you now.
Here in the brittle grass, with the late afternoon sunshine beating down on our faces, she parted her lips to speak.
Uncle Robbie!
Sarah came running out of the kitchen door.
Me and Katie made cornbread for you for supper because Katie said it was your favorite.
Katie and I.
Reluctantly, he released Katie and swung Sarah into his arms.
Well, that's what I said.
Sarah answered smugly, grinning first at Rob, then at Katie.
Didn't I, Katie?
Katie laughed at the two of them as she went back to the butter churn, her skin still tingling from Rob's touch. She pulled open the round wooden lid of it and peered inside. Perfect butter. She picked up the heavy churn and headed for the kitchen door. After a supper of venison stew and cornbread with sweet butter, Rob pushed up out of his seat, following Katie to the kitchen, a stack of dirty pewter dishes in his hands. He'd been restless all through the meal. As she leaned over the pinework table in the center of the kitchen, he rested his hands on her hips and leaned over to kiss the back of her neck. He whispered into her ear, and Katie felt her cheeks grow warm.
I've the meal to clean up, the children to bathe and tuck into bed. Do something with yourself, Rob. You make me nervous skittering about. Make yourself useful.
She teased, pushing his hands away and walking back toward the dining table in the other room. He stood in the doorway, running a hand through his hair. "You're telling me I'm in the way in my own home?" he huffed in feigned indignation. Sarah passed her uncle on the way to the kitchen, a dirty mug in each hand. "You're in the way, Uncle Robbie." He sighed.
"Well, you ladies said we're out of honey. Mayhap I'll go and gather a comb or two. It'll be the last of the year, I'll wager."
"Better not get bit by any bees, Uncle Robbie. You know bee bites make you sick."
"Ah!" He waved his hand as he reached for the three-cornered hat on the wall peg near the back door. "I'm too fast for the bees, Sarah."
"I'll bathe them and put them to bed. Don't be long." He slipped into his canvas work coat.
"No need to fear that, honey."
He winked at her, and then he was gone. An hour later, when both Sarah and Joshua were asleep in their room, Katie slipped out of the house and into the barnyard. The wind off the bay was so cold that she lifted the hood of her nut-brown woolen cloak to protect her head. Lantern light shone through the cracks in the barn walls as she walked toward it. But halfway across the yard, she stopped and listened. The wind howled, and the iron sailing ship weather vane on the barn roof squeaked. There it was again, that ominous, suffocating fear. Only this time there were voices, screams, the sounds of frightened animals. Where was this fear coming from? Was this a premonition or just an imprint of sorrows past? Before she had time to think on it, the feeling was gone. Katie hugged herself for warmth and hurried toward the barn. For the first time since she'd come to the house and felt the fear, she was truly afraid. "Rob, are you there?" She pushed open the barn door, and the sweet smell of alfalfa overcame her. "Rob?" He sat, his back to her, on a small bench near the rear wall. The lantern rested on the end of the bench beside him. "Rob, why didn't you answer me?" She closed the door behind her, thankful for the warmth of the barn. "I called you, but I..." She stopped in mid-sentence. His shoulders were hunched, and even from behind him she could tell his breathing was labored. "Rob, are you all right?" She came around the bench to face him. He had stripped off his coat, lifted his muslin shift above his flat stomach. It was splotched with red welts. Katie went down on one knee in front of him. He touched his chest.
Or at least I will be in a minute. Just give me a chance to catch my breath."
"You got stung." She touched the welts with her fingertips. "Anywhere else?" He shook his head.
The blessed beasties flew under me coat. But I got the honey. I got Sarah's honey."
Katie touched his forehead. He had no fever, but he was trembling slightly, and it was becoming harder for him to breathe. "You've had this before? The shaking, the welts, the difficulty breathing?" She brushed back the hair off his cheek, noticing the thin sheen of perspiration that was appearing over his upper lip.
"I know. Welts, but not the breathing. But it'll pass. Don't worry your sweet head over me. I'll be fit enough in a few minutes."
She thought for a second, then got up. "You sit there. I'll be right back. All right, Rob?" He looked at her, seeming to be confused. "Did you hear me, Rob? I said I'll be back with a poultice." He put out his hand to her. He was trembling.
"Don't leave me, honey. Married we be, and married we'll stay if you'll have me."
She squeezed his hand and pulled away. "I'll be right back, Rob." Katie's hands trembled as she pulled open the barn door. He was having some kind of reaction to the poison of the bee sting. He acted like a man bit by a water moccasin. Water moccasins killed men. Their poison made them shake so hard they went into convulsions and then died.
"Oh, God,"
she murmured under her breath. She ran back across the yard and into the kitchen. Not taking the time to slam the door behind her, she grabbed a crock of water and a small basket and began to clip herbs from the neat rows of bundles that ran along the low-hanging rafters. Satisfied with what she had chosen, Katie grabbed her mortar and pistol, dropped them into the basket with the water crock, then ran for the barn, slamming doors behind her. She reached Rob and went down on her knees. His breathing was now very shallow. His eyes were beginning to glaze over. He was leaning forward, supporting himself on his knees. She whipped off her woolen cloak and laid it over a pile of freshly raked straw.
Honey, that you, Katie? It's me.
She grasped his arm and tugged hard. Rob, you have to listen to me. You have to get up and lie down over here where I can tend to you. She tugged harder. Rob, you have to help me. I can't carry you. Slowly he rose. She guided him to her cloak. He dropped to one knee and then down on the other. She barely had to push on his shoulder for him to fall. She took a paring knife from the basket and cut open his shirt from neckline to hem. Rob had closed his eyes. His chest rattled with each labored breath. Rob? Rob, listen to me. She ground herbs as she spoke, trying to calculate in her head. You're going to be all right. Just don't go to sleep.
Cold,
he muttered thickly. She mixed water with the ground herbs, making a paste. You're cold? Just a minute. Let me care for the stings, and then I'll warm you up. I swear I will. She knelt and scooped up some of the paste with her fingers and rubbed it on the welts on his chest. He took a shuddering breath.
Ugh! Damn, that stings. You're trying to kill me, wife, and inherit Milan?
She smiled, thinking that no matter how desperate things got, Rob Cameron still kept his sense of humor. When she was done, she folded the cut sides of the shirt back together over his bare chest. He was shivering now. She grabbed his canvas coat, shook it to be certain there were no bees left inside, then covered him.
Honey?
He opened his eyes to look up at her.
I'm cold.
With great effort, he lifted one corner of the coat.
Crawl inside with me and keep me warm.
She slid under the coat beside him. His breath sounded as if it were coming a little easier. She wrapped her arm around him and rested her head on his shoulder. Better? He smiled, letting his eyes drift shut.
Better.
And he was breathing better. She could tell.
I feel like an ass,
he said after a few minutes. She smiled. He was going to be all right.
Rob was going to be fine.
What do you mean?
I had all these romantic intentions.
He pulled her closer to him. His voice was stronger now.
I was going to come into the kitchen, me whiskers freshly shaved, and I was going to bring you a wildflower.
He pointed to the bench, and sure enough, there was one orange-yellow flower lying beside the lantern.
I was going to take you into my arms and kiss you the way I know you like to be kissed.
He nuzzled her ear.
I was going to touch your breasts with me hands, tease your nipples with the tip of me tongue.
Katie could feel herself growing warm.
And then what?
And then I was going to lift you in me arms and carry you upstairs to your bed. To mine.
He kissed her cheek.
To ours.
Katie could feel her own breath becoming shorter now as she thought of being in Rob's arms, as she thought of his hands touching her, as she thought of the way she knew he could make her feel.
And then?
He lifted himself up on his elbow, his breathing practically normal again.
And then I would make love to you as I've wanted to since the day I laid eyes on you at the auction block.
Rob? She looked away. Rob, I'm not a virgin.
It doesn't matter. Not to me, honey.
She looked at him, forcing herself to meet his gaze.
It matters to me. I was raped.
He leaned to kiss her tenderly.
You didn't have a choice then.
She traced the outline of his lips. But I do now, she whispered. Their lips met again, but this time Rob rose up and gently pushed her back into her cloak and the soft straw that cushioned them.
Let me make love to you, Katie girl. Let me wash away the bad memories.
He brushed back her hair with his fingertips.
I don't really understand you or some of the things you do. I don't know where you came from. But listen to me, honey. I don't care.
There will be those who will say you married a witch.
I don't believe in such nonsense.
She looked into his eyes. But if you did, He pressed her deeper into the straw, bringing his mouth down to the soft valley of her breast that rose and fell above her bodice. "'Twould make no difference, honey, because I love you. I do." Katie closed her eyes, hugging his head to her breast. "And I love you, Rob Cameron." He lifted his head, his eyes sparkling with mischief. "So what shall we do about it, Katie, love?" "I don't know. You tell me. You were the one with all the plans a short time ago." "Shall we do this?" He brushed his lips against hers. He cupped her breast beneath the fabric of her gown with his hand. "And this?" "Yes." Slowly he brought his hand across her and down her inner thigh. His caress was light and deliciously tantalizing. "And what of this?"
"Oh, yes. Yes, Rob. Please."
She drew her hands over her head, relaxing in the cushiony straw.
"Love me."
He kissed her mouth, his tongue darting out to tease her. Then he kissed the tip of her nose, her cheek, the dimple at her chin. He kissed his way down the curve of her neck to the low-cut bodice of her gown, and all the while he was touching her. Even through the material of her gown and underthings, Rob's touch burned her flesh, making it white-hot with desire. When he pushed her gown off her shoulders and unlaced her stays, she could do nothing but sigh. His tongue drew a wet line from the cleft of her breasts to one peaked nipple and then the other. As he tongued the tip of her breast, she moaned softly, weaving her fingers through his honey wheat-colored hair. She murmured his name, and he whispered words that fanned the heat of her excitement. "Rob. Katie, my sweet Katie." He removed her clothing so gently, so naturally, that Katie felt no shame when she lay beside him on her cloak in the straw, naked for him to see her. Instead, she laughed as she pulled off his shirt and wiped the remainder of the poultice from his skin with it. She pulled at the string of his breeches. He nuzzled her neck, whispering words of encouragement. Katie couldn't resist a smile as she released his burgeoning member from the confines of the broadcloth. Her husband was well endowed. He would bring her not just pleasure, but many children. Katie brushed her fingertips across his warm flesh, fascinated by the softness of his skin and his reaction to her caress. "Ah," Rob groaned, laying his hand over hers.
"Enough, or I'll not make it to the coupling."
He rolled over onto her, shifting his weight to make her comfortable. As he lowered his mouth to hers, he pressed his hips against her rhythmically. When he entered her, he went slowly. A tiny gasp escaped her, but she was smiling, her eyes half closed. After giving her a moment to adjust to the new sensation, he began to move over her, and Katie quickly picked up his rhythm. Then suddenly she felt as if her entire being were hurled far into the air. She couldn't catch her breath. She couldn't speak, couldn't move. All she could do was hold on to Rob as her world burst into a thousand shards of white, sparkling light. Katie was vaguely aware of Rob's last thrust and his sigh of contentment. The next thing she knew, he had withdrawn from her and was cradling her in his arms. "I love you, honey," he kissed her.
"I love you. And I'll care for you always. Know that."
She opened her eyes, her lid so heavy that it took great effort. She smiled up at him.
"Life's good, isn't it?"
"That it is."
Then suddenly that feeling of fear came over Katie. This time it was so strong and so sudden that she bolted upright.
"What is it?"
Rob asked, sitting up with her.
"Are you hurt, Katie?"
She trembled violently. Then it was gone.
"Honey?"
"No. No, I'm fine," she lied.
"I just thought I heard one of the children, but it was only the wind." She lay back on the soft straw and reached up to stroke Rob's cheek, praying desperately that this sinking feeling in the pit of her stomach was not a premonition of events to come. Katie hummed to herself as she carried a second armful of wood into the kitchen. The wind caught the door and flung it open behind her. The flames of the hearth fire wavered in the draft. It was twilight, a strange time between sunset and darkness when the entire sky is cast in eerie light. Rob was in the barn feeding the stock, but he would be in soon. Katie dropped the armful of wood into the wood box and went back to close the door. Out of the corner of her eye, she spotted Sarah and Joshua playing with their black cat on the floor in the hallway. Katie had just grasped the doorknob when she heard two bears cry out. Across the barnyard, she saw him come sprinting toward her. At the same time, the second-story doors of the barn swung open, and Rob hurled himself out the door to the ground below, a musket in his hand. Two Bear shouted at Katie, flailing his arms as he ran toward her faster than it seemed possible for such an old man. "Run, Katie! The children!" Without hesitation, Katie spun around, that same sense of doom that she had been feeling all these weeks falling suddenly over her like a death veil. This was it. Whatever she had feared had come. The children, her mind screamed, "Save the children!" Though from what, she still didn't know. Katie raced through the kitchen, scooping up little Joshua into her arms and jerking Sarah off the floor by the wrist. "Ouch! Katie, that hurt!" "No time, Sarah. The root cellar!" Little Sarah stumbled to keep up with Katie as she dragged her into the kitchen. Two Bears was already there, sliding the heavy pine work table so that he could pull up the trap door that led down into the root cellar below. "You must hide from the evil," he cried, his frail hands shaking as he pulled on the iron ring and lifted the hatch. "This man is old, but he will defend you. Do not fear." Katie pushed Sarah into Two Bears' arms so that he could lower her onto the wooden ladder. "What evil, Two Bears?" "The pirates. The pirates, they come to Sarah's stand."
"Where? How many?"
"This man does not know. He only knows that Rob saw them landing on the beach from the hayloft and called out warning." Two Bears grasped Sarah by the armpits and swung her over the dark hole. As he swung her, the magic medicine bag hung around her neck, caught the corner of the table. The seam on the tiny leather fringe bag burst open and its contents spilled onto the swept floor. Sarah's black cat, Putum, curled around Katie's ankle, purring, and she pushed it aside with her boot.
"My magic! My magic!"
Sarah cried, struggling in Two Bears' arms. "Sarah! Into the cellar! I'll get the magic!" As Sarah allowed herself to be lowered into the root cellar, Katie immediately fell to her knees and began to pick up the contents of the torn leather bag with Josh still slung on her hip. A small feather, a red bead, a bit of fur, a minuscule seashell. Then she saw it. There, at her fingertips. A piece of turquoise. In an instant, her father's face came to her. A handsome, angular face with skin as red as turned Virginia soil. And the necklace he had worn about his neck. She picked up the piece of blue turquoise with a hole in it. It had belonged to her father, the Lenni-Lenape brave. She knew it as well as she knew her own name. Katie looked up at Two Bears, and he stared at the turquoise in her palm. Then he reached out and grabbed the baby from her arms and lowered him into the dark root cellar to his sister's waiting hands.
"My father,"
Katie heard herself say.
"No time now, granddaughter of mine. Time later to explain. Into root hole now, so that this man can protect his granddaughter and great-grandchildren."
Tears clouded Katie's vision as she leaned over the hole, still on her knees, and handed Sarah the handful of treasures.
Two Bears? Her grandfather?
But there was no time to think of this now. "Stay here and keep your brother quiet," she instructed Sarah. "I'll be back for you."
"What if you don't come back?"
"I'll come."
Sarah sniffed. She was young, but she had heard tales of these pirate attacks. She knew the Tidewater had seen death at the hands of the pirates.
"What if you don't? Then what do I do?"
Katie bit down on her lower lip to stifle a sob. "Then wait. Wait a long time. And then take Joshua to Widow Hartley's. Not by the road, but through the fields. Now get down so I can close the door, Sarah."
"It'll be dark. I want you to come down, too."
"Be brave. Be brave for your baby brother." Sarah nodded, lifting her chin.
"I'll be brave."
On impulse, Katie grabbed the black cat that still curled annoyingly around her ankles and dropped it down into the root cellar with the children. "Here, Putum will keep you safe. She blew the children a kiss and closed the trap door.
"You must go down," Two Bears told her from across the room where he grabbed a musket from beside the fireplace.
Katie shook her head fervently as she slid the table back over the hole and pushed a slop bucket under it, hoping to break the lines of the trap door. At that moment, she heard the first blast of musket fire.
"Rob,"
she murmured, not knowing why she had said it.
"I have to get to Rob."
"Inside, woman,"
Two Bears ordered gruffly, pushing her toward the table.
"Get into root hole."
Katie thrust out her chin.
"This is my land now. These are my children, my husband, and I'll defend them."
Two Bears' dark-eyed gaze met hers. And for the first time, Katie realized their eyes were identical in color. He tossed the musket through the air, and her hands shot up to catch it. He threw her a powder flask and a small leather bag containing musket balls and patches of cloth.
"You guard the children, and I will go for your husband. If this man has need of you, he will come."
Katie nodded, trembling as Two Bears grabbed a carving knife from the pine table and thrust it into his quill leather belt. Then he took the scythe left in the doorway and went out the kitchen door. She had to protect the children. She had to find a place to hide. But there was nothing to get behind. The kitchen was open and airy. Then she spotted the jelly cabinet Rob was making. It was empty. Katie raced across the kitchen and pulled open the door to the cabinet. She backed in and sank her blunt fingernails into the tiny ledge of the tin panel to pull it shut. She gripped the oak stock of the old musket, her knuckles white, waiting, listening. When the kitchen latch lifted, the click of the iron hardware echoed harshly in her ears. Katie prayed against all reason that the intruder was Rob or Two Bears, but she knew better. She could feel the evil. She heard several metal items hit the pine table. The silver tea service that belonged to Rob's mother, she assumed. Then the footsteps passed the jelly cupboard, and the pirate walked into the parlor. There was more crashing, and then footsteps up the staircase. The intruder came down a minute later and re-entered the kitchen. She heard him gathering up his booty. Another minute, and he would be gone. The children would be safe. Then she heard the silver clatter onto the table again, the scrape of wood against wood. It was the table. He was moving it. He had seen the hatch in the floor. Dear God, not the children. Not my children. Katie tightened her grip on the stock and barrel of the musket. Another instant, she would jump out. She heard the squeak of the trap door and Sarah's shrill scream. Katie kicked open the jelly cabinet door with her boot and swung the musket to draw a bead on the black-haired pirate in the French coat. At the same instant, Sarah's cat came flying out of the root cellar. Pirate hollered out in surprise and batted the creature with his pistol, but the cat leaped onto his face, sinking its claws into his flesh before falling to the ground unharmed to race for the cover of a stool. Katie clicked back the hammer of her musket as the pirate swung and lifted his pistol. She squeezed the trigger without hesitation. The pirate's pistol went off at the same instant, but the ball struck the jelly cabinet, missing Katie. Pirate went down on one knee, dropping his smoking weapon. He gripped his chest, staring at her with empty eyes. Blood oozed through his fingers. Katie immediately began to reload where she stood. Her hands knew the routine, even though her mind couldn't remember. Bite the lid off the powder flask, dump, patch and ball in the barrel, ram, load, frizz and pan with powder.
"Katie!"
Sarah called hysterically from down below.
"Katie, where are you?"
Baby Joshua was screaming. The pirate pitched forward onto his face and didn't move again.
"It's all right,"
Katie soothed, her musket reloaded. She sidestepped the dead pirate and leaned over the root cellar hatch.
"It's all right, sweetness."
Katie heard more musket fire in the direction of the bay and a shout of a man.
Was that Rob?
Katie grabbed the ring of the root cellar door to lower it again.
"Be brave."
Little Sarah, holding tightly to her brother, tears running down her pale cheeks, smiled up.
"I'll be brave, just like Putnam. If he can fight a pirate, I can too."
Katie laughed through her tears as she kicked the dead pirate's hand aside and lowered the trap door again.
"Katie!"
Two Bears came bursting into the kitchen as she dropped the root cellar door. "Katie must come!" The pirates?
Your Rob man set fire to their ship. Must come, Katie.
Where's Rob? She ran for the door. Is he all right?
Must hurry. Time comes too quickly. Only a moment between life and the death of forever. Must save him.
Rob's been hurt.
She ran out into the twilight, following the old Indian who spoke in riddles.
Has Rob been injured?
The old Indian refused to answer. Instead, he grasped her sleeve and led her around the house and down toward the bay. Katie glanced over her shoulder at the path of destruction the pirates had left behind them. Half a dozen hogs ran loose, squealing. One lay half-butchered near the barn door. Mule Sugar brayed and raced through a broken place in the fence, headed for the cover of the woods. Chickens, set free from their wire coops, scattered in every direction, feathers flying. Several piles of still damp hay burned, sending billows of black smoke into the night air. The bodies of four pirates lay, bloody on the path between the house and the barn. She turned away from the carnage and the sweet smell of warm human blood. It was almost dark now. As Katie and Two Bears rounded the side of the house and started down the bank toward the beach, she saw a blaze on the edge of the shore. By the orange light of the setting sun and the glow from the blaze aboard the pirate sloop, Katie caught sight of Rob's silhouette. He battled two pirates hand to hand, standing tall and brave in the fiery glow. Katie stopped dead, clamping a hand over her mouth in fear that she would cry out and distract him. Two Bears caught her by the arm and dragged her behind him down the hill.
Must hurry, grandchild. There will only be seconds.
Katie ran as fast as she could, her loaded musket cradled in one arm. Rob swung his empty musket like a war club, striking first one pirate, then the other. A man in a red coat swung an axe, the other a sword. Rob was not more than 100 yards from her now, but it seemed a million miles. She wanted to take aim and shoot, but the sights were so bad on the old musket she carried, she feared she'd miss the thieving bastards and hit Rob instead. Rob spun around in a circle, wielding his musket butt first over his head. The pirate in the red coat swung his axe. Rob ducked and brought the musket stock across the man's head. Even from this distance, Katie heard the sickening crack of the scoundrel's skull. He fell without uttering a sound. Without a moment's hesitation, Rob stepped up to the pirate with the sword, becoming the hunter rather than the hunted. The pirate took a swordsman's stance, laughing at the farmer with his unloaded wheel-lock. But Rob's face was grim with determination. He sidestepped each of the pirate's parries with the swift, sure-footed grace of a dancer. His concentration was unfailing. For him, there was nothing at this moment but the man who threatened his family. Not more than 10 feet from them, Katie and Two Bears came to a halt. Rob's gaze never strayed, though he must have known they were there. He took 2 steps back, 1 forward. He ducked and dove, still swinging the only weapon he had to defend himself and those he loved. The pirate made a sudden start forward, but instead of stepping back, Rob swung around and caught the tip of the sword with a musket butt. The pirate gave a strangled cry as he tried to hang onto the sword and went down on his knees in the damp sand. Rob struck again with his musket, this time hitting the pirate's wrist. The man howled with pain. Drawing back his hand, Rob reached down for the sword on the ground and came up with it, grasped in his gloved hand.
Surrender, he bellowed, breathing heavily. Surrender yourself, and you'll be turned into the high sheriff for trial and hanging. That's where you meet your maker now.
Katie saw the flash of metal. Time seemed to tilt on end and cease moving. It was as if she was there, but was not there. The pirate had drawn a derringer from his leather boot. Katie heard a woman scream, her own. Scream she had heard on the wind in the barnyard last week. The pirate pulled the trigger at point-blank range. Rob had already begun to move forward to sink the sword into his chest. The pirate screamed in agony. The night air filled with the smell of gunpowder and burned flesh.
No!
Katie screamed.
No!
She felt Two Bears' hand on her shoulder, pushing her forward, and she flung the musket aside and ran to Rob. The pirate had fallen backward to stare up, unseeing, the sword buried deep in his chest. Rob had fallen into the sand. Katie dropped to her knees beside him, sobbing. She grasped him by the shoulders and, with a heave, rolled him over. Dear God, where was Two Bears? Why wasn't he here?
Rob,
she murmured,
Rob!
He was covered with blood, a gaping hole in his stomach. He was so pale. His eyes were shut as if he was sleeping so peaceful.
Rob! Rob! She screamed, shaking him violently. Rob Cameron, don't you do this to me! Don't die!
How could he not die? The hole in him was wide and deep. He was covered in blood. She felt no rise and fall of breath in his chest. Katie sank back into the sand, cradling Rob's head in her lap. He was still warm to the touch. How could he be dead? Then she felt Two Bear's hand on her shoulder.
Hurry, grandchild of mine. The magic cannot wait.
Katie looked up at him, barely able to see through her tears. She was on the edge of hysteria. Rob was dead. He was dead.
Hurry,
Two Bears insisted. Katie shook her head, threading her fingers through Rob's blonde hair, pressing a fervent kiss to his forehead.
No, no, I can't.
You can. You must,
the old man whispered.
Use your powers.
She shook her head harder. I can't, she sobbed, her tears falling on Rob's pale face.
This is not a bird. He's a man. A man.
It's inside you, child of my child. Look deep. Believe.
They killed my mother for healing.
Your choice. Believe or don't believe. Let the man you love live or let him die.
Katie watched in disbelief as the old Indian man walked away, abandoning her. He headed back toward the farmhouse. Through a veil of tears, she looked down at Rob's strikingly handsome face.
Where was his laughter now? Their laughter.
Taking in a deep breath, Katie moved out from under him, lowering his head gently to the sandy ground. Then, leaning over him, she placed both hands on the gaping mortal wound, and slowly she lowered her face to her hands. She whispered beneath her breath. A second passed, then another. She waited, feeling nothing but emptiness and stark fear. Then a strange tremor shook him. His chest rose as he sucked in a deep breath. Katie lifted her head in utter disbelief to see his eyelids flutter.
Honey,
he whispered as if awakening from a deep sleep.
Katie, girl, is that you?
Her lower lip trembled.
It's me, my love. I'm here.
The children.
Safe.
The pirates.
All dead. Their boat is sinking.
He lifted his head and then let it fall back. He licked his dry lips.
I feel like I've been to hell and back. What happened?
Katie was afraid to speak.
You were shot.
He looked confused.
Shot? Shot where?
Here, she whispered. She was afraid to move her hands for fear of what she would see, but she knew she must. He laid his hand on hers. Looking up into her face, there was so much blood on him, on her. He watched as she slowly lifted her hands from his stomach. Rob swore beneath his breath. There was nothing there now but a large powder burn in his linen shirt. He looked up at her, his blue-eyed gaze locking with hers.
I was dead,
he said, his voice barely a whisper. She couldn't look away from those eyes. She couldn't lie.
Yes. Then you really are a...
She leaned over him and pressed her lips to his to silence him.
Don't say it. You must never say it. Just tell me you love me and that you'll always love me.
Rob sat up, pulling her into his arms and crushing her to him. He smoothed her long black hair with his broad hand.
I love you, honey, he said through his tears. I'll always love you. No matter who or what you are.
Hi, this is Michael Tylo. It's always a thrill to read great romantic stories for you. If you'd like to listen to more of them, look for
A Captive Bride by Susan Sackett. Game of Hearts by Dawn Aldridge Poor. With Cupid's Intervention by Cindy Holbrook.